Hello, everyone, and welcome to Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. I'm Rolando, and it is just me here today. And it is August 12th when you guys are listening to this, and that means that August is basically over, which means the summer is almost gone. So are you experiencing that summertime sadness? I am. I feel like I always am, mostly because I don't have a summertime body, but that's my problem. Anyway, guys, so last week we started doing our collection of best ofs. Nicole picked her favorite episode so far that we have recorded, and she chose The Magnificent Seven, which I will say is a magnificent episode. Get it? Yes, of course you do. And this week it's my turn, and I'm actually picking an episode which had absolutely nothing to do with movies or television. I'm talking about our Grammy special, the Music Covers Edition, featuring one of my good friends, Ryan Lietzis of the band Shwizz. I think it was one of my favorite episodes because it just shows you that, like, this idea of reusing old stuff in new ways is not just something that we see in the visual arts. It's something that we see in even audio, as we can tell by the list of cover songs that we have gone through. I think Nicole and Ryan really picked some choices that I didn't even realize were covers. I presented more mainstream pop culture ones, as I am, I feel like, a mainstream pop culture guy. But this is it. We're going to be playing the episode. We hope you enjoy. And just as a reminder, we will be back in September, and we will start with It, Chapter 2. Until then, stay unoriginal.
On this week, for remakes, reboots and revivals, we discuss our favorite music covers. No, we won't be afraid. No, we won't be afraid to dish out all the tea this week.
On Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality. Let's do this.
I hope we don't get sued.
That's like always our goal.
So if you haven't guessed it yet, this week we're doing a special episode of Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. We're doing a covers edition. Yay. In honor of the Grammys coming out this Sunday.
Yeah, the wonderful Grammys.
I don't know who's been nominated this year. I assume Weezer is up for everything, but that's just my imagination. You know? And actually, that voice you just... So actually, before we go, it's just me and Nicole here today in the studio.
No Eddie Z, he's sick.
No Eddie Z, he is sick. He may or may not have the flu. We don't know yet.
And Josh is still MIA. We don't know where he is.
But if you follow him on Instagram, you might know.
Yeah.
And today, actually, we have a very special guest. Guest host, I guess? Or just a guest star?
Guest star.
Guest star. Guest star that is Ryan Lietzis of Shwizz.
Hey.
And Ryan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, where do I begin?
Keep it short.
I'm a musician. I live in the New York area. Gigging around, doing that. I work at a couple clubs in the city. Brooklyn Bowl is my mainstay, which many people, I'm sure, know. And pretty much just gigging musician. And that's, I'm assuming, why you've brought me on the show today.
Yes, we brought you on the show because you are a musician. And more importantly, you have a good Instagram following. So hopefully we can get a little bit of that. Start following us.
And to steal my social media.
Of course. So actually, tell us where people can follow you, Ryan, so that way we have that.
So you can find me on Instagram. My handle is Shwizz himself. And my band is on Instagram, just as Shwizz the band. Mm-hmm. And there's Facebook, obviously, Shwizz. And those are really the main two that I use. You know, we have a YouTube page, but we're not really into Twitter as much. And I don't know, what else do the kids use these days?
Tinder. Those are basically it.
Tinder, J-Date.
You have like Tinder? That. I didn't know you have Tinder.
You guys should make a band called Shwizz Off.
Schwizz off.
Yeah.
That sounds like an album. That sounds like a product. Like a.
It does sound like a product.
Off, like a cleaning product of some sort.
Yeah, good on all floors and tiles.
Yeah. It's actually a good segue for us because before you begin, we're going to make sure that you guys follow us on our Instagram. That's Remakes, Reboots, Revivals. And you can find us on our Facebook page, which is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, you can also email us, remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, actually, Ryan, when we were talking about who you are, we forgot to mention that you are also the star of a documentary.
Oh, that's
that
true.
That has been produced by two people here speaking.
That's true.
So actually, if you're interested in seeing Ryan for who he really is,
yep.
We'll be sure to have a link to the trailer on the show notes.
Yes, yes. So, we'll promote it this week on our Instagram too.
We are going to be promoting you this week, guys. Awesome. All right, cool. So, again, we'll be talking about music covers this week because covers, I feel, are the remakes
of the music world.
The
yeah.
music world, right?
Yeah.
Agree to disagree? Ryan, you're the musician. Is that true or false?
I think it's true, I guess.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I think that's a fact at this point. So the way we're going to do it is each of us have prepared three original songs and covers that we happen to like.
Yeah.
And we'll just be discussing a little, and then hopefully we'll all have opinions on it. So we're going to start off with Nicole. All
right, so let's just delve right into it. So my first choice that I'm going to share is a song that was originally released in January of 1969, written by John Fogerty for his band Creedence Clearwater Revival. Rolando looks
I'm
so all, clueless.
I'm so confused, yeah.
I wish you could see Ryan's face. And the song is called Proud Mary.
Oh, okay, Proud Mary. Yeah, yes. I do know this song.
So I don't need to play this song for anyone.
Proud Mary keeps on rolling.
Okay, so it's interesting. What you're singing.
Is that the Tina Turner?
The cover. Is the Ike and Tina Turner.
Yes.
And they even like rearranged it a bit. Like it's almost a completely different song.
Okay.
Of course, their cover, I was going to say remake, but cover is so soulful.
Yeah. It's
and like it's a landmark song for Tina Turner. The cover was done like 3 years later.
Wow.
Thinking,
so it's like,
oh no, wait, even 1971.
Wow. So yeah. It was a short. Okay.
And completely, I think, redefined the song and gave a
and
great...
what year was this?
Well, okay, so Creedence was 69.
Okay.
Ike and Tina Turner, 71.
Wow. Okay.
And they're both considered like great rock and roll songs.
Okay. All right, let's play it away.
A little bit of Proud Mary by Creedence, right?
Okay, yeah. So I've heard that one before.
You have?
On commercials. That's actually my most experience with Creedence Clearwater.
I think so. Apparently, he wrote it after he was discharged from the National Guard.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I actually thought that was a Tina Turner original.
No, yeah. That's a song that might have even surpassed in the terms of, I guess, like legacy?
Iconicism?
Although it depends on who you're more like familiar with. I feel like a lot of people don't even know Creedence Clearwater Revival in general these days.
Yeah. What about you, Ryan? Which one did you know? Do you know stronger?
So I think that I knew the Tina Turner version first, I believe. And then, but I knew about Creedence Clearwater pretty much since I'm a guitar player, you know, since I started learning guitar when I was 15 or whatever. So I probably have known about, I probably know more about Creedence Clearwater now and John Fogerty than I ever will about Tina Turner. Although I do, I've heard it. Yeah, I do. I play that song a lot though with the cover band. And another side note is that I actually saw John Fogerty live like 2 years ago. Kind of a happy accident. I was at this it's called the Greenwich Town Party in Greenwich, Connecticut. So, you know, it's very, very highbrow.
Very WASP.
Okay. Highbrow concert there.
Oh, and my God, so, was Martha Stewart there?
Yeah, I wish. And John Fogerty wasn't even like the headliner. He was the support for Hall & Oates.
I'm so excited for Hall & Oates. I love Hall & Oates.
But I will say, though, that John Fogerty pretty much like blew the place out of the water. He was by far the best band. And his band was sick. And his son was like the guitar player in the band, too. And like, but they didn't play Proud Mary. They played like every other John Fogerty song that exists except for Proud Mary.
I'm sure he's fucking sick of that song by now. Bro.
I'm sure he knows. It's like people associate this with Tina Turner.
Yeah.
And that too. Yeah. Exactly. He's like, I wrote it. I can't even do it. Totally. I grew up with Clearwater. I mean, I love them. Creedence Clearwater. Yeah. And I think they're really great. And I think that John Fogerty is a really underrated songwriter. And the whole band is just like, they're great. My dad really loved them. So they also hold a special place in my heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not my favorite Creedence song. My favorite might be Who Will Stop the Rain.
Oh, yes. Of course.
This is not my MO.
But to the Ike and Tina cover, let's play a little bit of that really quick.
Sure.
Rolling on a river.
Rolling on the river.
So much more soulful.
Yes.
I mean, like with Ike and Tina singing at the same time and he's doing what he's doing, her singing her vocals. They make it into this spectacle, almost a beautiful spectacle of a song.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that's a very awesome way to kick it off.
Sweet.
That's a very awesome way to kick it off. So
thank you.
Ryan, you have a hard act to follow. So you're next, Ryan.
Yeah,
what do you got for us?
This is true. So I'm gonna go with my first pick, which was originally by Paul McCartney and Wings.
Ooh.
Redone by Guns N' Roses, which is Live and Let Die.
Ooh.
That's a good one.
Yes.
Okay.
So Live and Let Die was released in 1973 and Guns N' Roses did it in 1991. So a bit of a difference there in times. But yeah, I was basically obsessed with Slash and Guns N' Roses when I was first learning guitar. So I used to know all the Slash solos and stuff like that. And Live and Let Die was always one of my favorites. You know, he plays the little violin line on guitar that they have in that song. And so, yeah, that's, I think, that was my top pick, I think.
Yeah.
And, that's your top pick?
That's your top pick of your favorite covers and stuff?
I think so. I think we'll go with that.
So a little bit of film history for Live and Let Die. Live and Let Die was the first film that anyone but Sean Connery starred in for a James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. This was Roger Moore's first, and everything about it was refreshing. I watched all the James Bond movies in order. So when Live and Let Die happened, it was just such a breath of fresh air. And that song, like the energy around the song, like really conveyed like excitement for where James Bond was going to go, because they actually really exhausted it with the two films that, like, Sean Connery's last two films. They were not very good.
I don't know the history of like James Bond movies. I don't.
Yeah.
Actually, Live and Let Die is one of my least favorite James Bond songs.
Really?
I don't feel it's nowhere near as good as like Goldfinger.
Oh, well, Eartha Kitt singing her ass off.
It's such a good song.
No, Shirley Bassey, sorry. Singing her ass off.
I mean, even like the more recent one, Skyfall with Adele, I think it feels more James Bondy than Live and Let Die.
Are you kidding
me? It doesn't feel very James Bondy.
I totally disagree.
I listened to this song. So actually, I listened to the song way before I ever knew it was a James Bond movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't when I found out that this song was in the James Bond movie, it was the song for a James Bond movie, I was just like, no fucking way. It just doesn't feel James Bondy for me.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. First of all, I didn't know that it was even the song for the James Bond movie. I just thought it was a happy coincidence.
So wait, when did you find that out?
Right now.
You just see? Does it feel very James Bond? Like, I feel like James Bond usually feels a little sexier, a little more mysterious. Live and Let Die has kind of like I don't even know how to like classify. Like, what kind of emotions do you think that song brings?
You know, it's so interesting. Do you guys know that song by Carly Simon? Nobody does it better. Do you know that song?
No.
Ryan, do you know that song?
Nah,
oh, damn it. I was going to be like, that's a James Bond song, and that's like one of the best James Bond songs, and it's a pure ballad.
You know, I feel like, I can't say this, but like, you know what, like, one of the most hated James Bond songs is the Madonna one?
Yeah.
Die Another Day. I feel like McCartney one is the one right after.
No, it's not. Live and Let Die is always among the best James Bond songs.
Oh, all right. If you say so. So,
well, should we play a little bit?
Let's play a little bit of it, and then I'll tell you exactly why does this sound like a James Bond.
But with this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry. Say, live and let die.
That does not feel very James Bondy. I think for me, the James Bond is used all the songs that are usually kind of the strings that the like the James Bond theme almost underneath. That one, this song never had that. This song kind of feels like its own removed song. Same complaint I have with the Madonna song. It doesn't have that kind of like James Bondiness.
Then you got to listen to it because like a lot of James Bond songs have like transformed what is a James Bond song. Like I think Goldfinger became so iconic that a lot of them tried to get away from that because they're like, we're not going to do Goldfinger, guys. We're not.
Oh, that's true. No one is going to do Goldfinger.
Yeah, because like Goldfinger... the year after Goldfinger was Thunderball and Tom Jones sang that song. And it was almost an exact, like, really, really reaching for Goldfinger that people were like, we can't make that mistake.
You know who actually I think is close is the Tina Turner version for GoldenEye.
That was a great one.
That's a good song.
Written by Bono and the Edge from U2, oddly enough.
No way! Yeah. I did not know that.
I randomly know my James Bond facts, but clearly. Ryan didn't know it was James Bond until today. So why did you think that the Guns N' like, what is it about the Guns N' Roses cover that you love so much?
You know, I just really like the rock and roll element of it, you know, and now in my later years, I kind of respect the Paul McCartney and Wings version a little bit more because it's like it's like a little more musical, I guess. And like the instrumentation they use is more in depth, and the arrangement and stuff, and like the record. I can only imagine what the recording was like where they, you know, there's that whole orchestral section. You know what I mean? It probably took them forever to record that, you know. I think I respect that version a lot more now that I'm older. But when I was young, I mean, that Guns N' Roses version was just like in your face, just rock and roll. Just it was just like badass, you know, and I loved the song. And so just, you know, the combination of all that. And I was like hooked, you know.
Right. Let's play a little bit of it.
Not if this ever changed in one.
So interesting because this is all like, it's not an orchestra. It's the band.
And yeah,
like...
it's just rock and roll. It's just, you know, five piece, whatever they were, six guys.
Yeah.
I think.
Really cool.
Yeah. Which one did you hear first, Nicole?
Paul McCartney.
The Paul McCartney one?
Yeah.
I actually think I heard the Guns N' Roses one first.
Oh.
It's so funny. I actually forget that they covered it, though, because the Paul McCartney one has kind of become more. I hear that one way more on the radio than I hear the Guns N' Roses version.
Yeah.
I do.
I think when the Guns N' Roses one came out, it was really, really big. And then, but like legacy-wise, it's definitely still popular.
I couldn't agree more.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. So Rolando's up.
I'm up. All right. Awesome. Okay, cool. So my cover is from, so all my covers are somehow, well, not all of them, but the ones that, the first two I'm picking are definitely from the era of TRL. Also known as Total Request Live.
Oh.
We all used to watch that growing up, right? Most of us, I would say. After school, you watch Carson Daly there, count down the top 10 videos of the day. And one of the few, there were never that many rock acts that kind of like go towards the top, but one of the top acts that like was the first to kind of break into Total Request Live was outside of Limp Bizkit's Faith. Right, which I did want to do that one, but I'm not going to do that one. I'm actually going to go with one that I actually like a lot more, which is a little song by Alien Ant Farm called "Smooth Criminal."
Oh, wow!
Which is one of my favorite covers of a Michael Jackson song. So, as we all know, "Smooth Criminal" originally by Michael Jackson, 1988. It had like that crazy music video where he's like a mobster trying to save a child.
Uh-huh. And it's also based off of one of my favorite movie musicals ever.
What?
The Bandwagon from 1953. There's this whole sequence where they like do a murder mystery and it's just a pure dance ballet for 15 minutes. And no they way. Go into a cafe and like Fred Astaire is wearing the white shirt suit and everything. So
it's based off of a Fred Astaire movie. Yep,
taken right out of one of my favorite moments in a movie musical ever.
And that, yeah, that movie, I mean, that's a music video worth watching. So you know there was a video game based after it, right?
Really?
There was a Sega Genesis video game where you're playing as Michael Jackson. You're like dancing to like fight the criminals. And it's like a platform game where you're jumping on platforms and stuff. And there's like little kids that are locked up. Like they're in like little jails. And so Michael Jackson has to like save them.
What?
And knowing all we know now about Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
it's a little creepy, but yeah. Kids in Cages, Michael Jackson. You heard it here on Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. So let's listen to a little bit of Smooth Criminal with Michael Jackson. So the other interesting thing about this Smooth Criminal, the original one, is like the invention of like Michael Jackson's like, you know, gravity lean or the anti-gravity lean, the one where he's like kind of defying the laws of physics and kind of doing these like weird leans in performances. I think it actually premiered in the video and stuff.
Yeah, it did. Mm-hmm.
It's like a patented technique.
That's
right?
This song was that?
This is the premiere for it. Wow. That move. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Iconic in its own right. There's the original Smooth Criminal. And for it to be covered by this unknown rock band, punk, I don't know. How do you classify them?
Unknown. Like, I think that's a good word.
Definitely, yeah, unknown. Alien Ant Farm. This was actually their debut single. And this is one of those songs that like I hear it, and this is a really good cover because it is so far removed from it's definitely like you can hear the riff, right? You can hear the you can hear the undertones of what the original song is, and yet they changed it into a whole different genre that worked out so well for the song. And I think because of the subject matter, it works so well in this one. So let's play a little bit about the alien ant. Let's play a little of the Alien Ant Farm. Music video scared the shit out of me because this is as a Hispanic kid growing up in like an urban area watching like these white people in like these large lawns like doing outside wrestling, doing like tricks with like their motorbikes and like kind of just looking disgusting,
nightmares,
terrified the shit out of me.
Yeah,
nothing I can relate to in this music video, and yet the song is so fucking good. It's one of those songs that I actually use as my in my workout songs.
Oh, nice.
When I work out, the few times I do.
I can't think of any other songs by Alien Ant Farm.
Oh, I can't either.
No, there
I
don't are none. So.
This is what they are known for.
I would assume they probably have an album or something, but you know.
Yeah, this was their lead single for their album. Anthology was the name of their album.
Yeah, that's very clever.
That's so Yeah,
the only song I know from this band, and it's lived on my iPod since. And it's like a good song. I can go to it. I still enjoy it when I listen to it. Every now and then now, New York City has the alternative station, Alt Rock.
Yeah.
Finally. And every now and then it will show up on the playlist and it always still pumps me up. So for sure, this is one of those songs that like I get like happy listen to.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. But which one? I'm assuming, Nicole, the first one you heard was Michael
Jackson. Michael Jackson.
Have you heard?
I grew up on Michael. And then I remember when that song came out. Actually, yeah. So that music video, like I remember watching on, like literally on Total Request Live.
That's where I heard the song for the first time. Yeah. What about you, Ryan?
I think that actually this might have been, I think I actually heard this before I heard the Michael Jackson version.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because like I knew Michael Jackson, and me and my brother always listened to a good amount of Michael Jackson, but I wasn't like a diehard MJ kid growing up, you know? I was more into rock and stuff and punk rock and crap like
Lucky
that.
Lucky for you, right?
Yeah. And
MJ kids?
Yeah.
We're going to get sued by them. Yeah, allegedly, yeah. Guys, allegedly.
They made the song their own, but like they still did the, like you can't do Smooth Criminal and not do the lean, you know? Yeah. So like Michael Jackson just like makes whatever is his, even if somebody else takes it, it will always still be Michael Jackson's.
Yeah.
But they still did a good job.
Yeah, actually, fun fact, this actually became a number one on the Billboard Modern Rock Tracks.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, good for the only for song that I'm sure that they must be known for.
Yeah.
I hope they get lots of royalties still for it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Good, I'm glad you guys liked my first choice.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
All right, Nicole, we're back to you.
Back to me. So my second choice is a song released in January 1973. The person who sang it actually won the Grammy that year for Record of the Year and Best Pop Female Performance. Mm. And it got up to number one on the Billboard Hot 100. And according to Rolling Stone, because, you know, they think they have the right to say these things, but when they ranked the 500 greatest songs, this song came up a number 360, not that high.
No, but considering all music?
Yeah.
They're ranking all music.
And then Billboard has it at 82 on their list of 100 greatest songs of all time. So, I mean, do you know it? Do you think you know it?
Is it Cher related?
Oh, no. I wish it was Cher related. People wouldn't dare remake Cher songs. My song is Killing Me Softly.
Oh, that's a fucking great choice.
By Roberta Flack.
Okay.
And then the cover in the 90s by the Fugees. So let's play a little bit of the Roberta Flack one. Strumming my bed with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song. This might be the first out of all the songs discussed today that I knew the cover before I knew the original.
I agree with you there. I actually knew the cover before I knew the original.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've actually only heard the original only once. This is like the second time I'm hearing it.
They don't play it that much. I don't really hear it on the radio.
You know why? Because Lauryn Hill and the Fugees, they did such a great job on this one that it's just become the standard one.
Yeah. I mean, when the cover came out in 1986, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this song. And it wasn't even like though a song that like you got tired of. You're like, oh, that fucking song again.
It
like,
still gets airplay.
It still gets airplay. It's just an amazing song. And there's something about, I don't know. I really like the way Lauryn Hill sings it.
And her vocals. Like her vocal, like this, you could hear the 70s coming out of the original one.
Yeah.
And the Lauryn Hill one has like, her voice is just so, you could just hear the raw emotion coming out of her as she's just singing.
Well, you know, so here's the history, right? Praz, one of the members of the Fugees, and this came from their album, The Score, a great freaking album.
Yes.
I bought it when it came out too, because that's how popular the song was. Everybody wanted that album. So Praz was like, we should do it, but we should change the lyrics to make it anti-drugs and anti-poverty.
Oh.
And the songwriters, they refused. They're like, if you want to cover our song, you're going to cover our song. You're not going to change a single thing about it.
How did they change it to be anti-poverty?
So they didn't.
How would they have done that?
I mean, they could have very easily. If you listen to the whole album too, they could have very easily done that.
Okay.
So they took a sample from a tribe called Quest song called Bonita Applebaum, and they took the bow, 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 bow.
Okay.
And, you know, they added a really great hip hop beat to it, and then they covered it, and that's all they fucking did.
Yeah.
and it was amazing.
You know, it's so funny.
And they also won a Grammy.
No, did they?
Yeah.
Good for them. It's a good song to earn the Grammy. That song, every time, I remember one time I was driving with my parents and I was in charge of the radio and that song came on.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad and mom were listening to it and they hate this cover.
What?
They do not like it. They actually, that dong, dong, dong part.
Yeah.
They absolutely hate it.
What?
I don't know what, for me, that's what makes the song, right?
Yeah.
Like you just can't, like you just, you know, you finish the chorus and then dong, dong, dong. I also know the other part is like strumming my pig with his fingers. One time. Yeah, it's just like, it's such a good song. I love
it really
the song.
Is.
Yeah.
Should we play it?
Let's play it.
So every single song that I pick, I think the covers do a better job of the originals. And I still appreciate the originals very much. But I do think that the reason why I picked my songs, because there's so many covers out there and they all do good jobs or mediocre jobs or just straight up terrible jobs, like some Britney Spears ones.
How dare you? You haven't even heard my choice.
But because we know Rolando's bringing a Britney Spears song, like, let's be honest. But I think that this is such a I think the Roberta Flack doesn't even like come into comparison to the way Lauryn Hill does it.
I love the Fugees version, and I think a little bit of my liking the other version more in my later years also stems from me not being a big Lauryn Hill fan in later years, because I think that she's undoubtedly an amazing singer, but I think that she's a really shitty person. And
she's so definitely problematic.
I have zero respect for her in that regard.
How dare you? First of all, I mean, look, her whole stance of like not wanting white people to listen to her music, I'm okay with this, because she said nothing about Hispanics.
I mean, I'm fine
right?
with that too. I don't care about that. I had an experience where I worked a show of hers, and I was
so you actually have actual personal experience
Well, yeah.
All right, dish.
I was just a fly on the wall, though. I wasn't like, I wasn't talking to her or, you know, I think I came within like 5 feet of her at one point. You know, it was probably like her band gets there early. You know, they're there at noon or something like that. And the band's there and they're setting up and they're rehearsing. And they're like, yeah, Lauryn gets here at 2 o'clock and the doors open at 6. So they do like a 2 to 6 like rehearsal. So it's 2 o'clock and like the band stops rehearsing. Then it's like 3 o'clock. No Lauryn. 4 o'clock. No Lauryn. And then finally, at like 4:45, she strolls in, and like you could see, like all the band members, everyone's like, "Oh my god, she's coming!" Everybody like places people, you know what I mean? Like, and she finally gets there, and you know she's dilly dallying around. She finally gets on stage at like 5:15, and granted, it's doors are open at 6 o'clock. She sound checks until like 8 o'clock almost. I think she ended her sound check like 7:30, 8 o'clock. And the doors are supposed to be at 6 o'clock, and people showed up there because this is Lauryn Hill show. So it's like, you know, it's and the tickets are whatever, $75, $100. And it's the middle of January, and people are showing up at 5:30 and they're waiting outside, and it's fucking 2 degrees outside. And she refuses to let them open the doors. And she makes these people wait outside in the cold for over 2 hours while she sound checks, because she just, you know, decided to stroll in at 5 o'clock or whatever, you know? And so I felt terrible for all the people that spent all that money and buy these tickets or whatever. And and there was just a whole vibe about her that was like, everyone was like afraid of her, you know what I mean? Like nobody wanted to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing around her or whatever, you know what I mean? That was kind of the vibe that I got. And it was just like,
Cause she's Lauryn Hill.
I'm listening to this
she's
story.
A diva.
Yeah, like, but listen, in my experience,
like Mariah Carey pulls this shit all the time. Like no one says anything.
I'm kind of listening to the story and being like, oh no, he's giving Rolando ideas. This is like the diva Rolando always wanted to be.
Yeah. Oh my god, most certainly.
Yeah,
I'm like this, like just no, without having to have any talent. You know,
I understand that she's Lauryn Hill, but I mean, I think about the countless other people that I've worked with at Broken Bowl or outside of Broken Bowl that are just as famous as her, and they don't do any of that kind of bullshit, you know what I mean? They're like, they're cool and they're respectful and they understand that they're just another human too. Like she just thinks she's on another level.
You're a great singer, but your personality is shit. Yeah. Like we shouldn't make an exception, but I mean, I don't know about her as a person.
I can't wait to have I can't wait to be like this big podcast star and like have that shitty behavior. And people are going to say this about me. It's just like, you know, a great podcaster, but that doesn't excuse shitty behavior. And would be like, no, it does. It does.
Yeah. Find me on iTunes.
All right, Ryan, you're next. What do you got for us?
Oh, I'm next. Okay. So I'm going to go with a Beatles song.
Ooh.
Which was
Who remade the Beatles?
Many people have remade the Beatles, but this is probably this is probably the most famous one though, which is "A Little Help with My Friends" by Joe Cocker.
I had no idea.
No,
do you know what we're talking about?
Definitely
no idea.
If you play it, you'll know it.
Well, actually, good cue for Nicole to start playing me the song.
Yeah.
All right. Let's.
So the original, by the way, was 1967, and Joe Cocker was only a year later, 1968.
Oh, okay, so it's one of those like.
So they're pretty close.
Covered.
And okay. Joe Cocker has a couple Beatles covers he does, but this is the most famous one.
Okay, fine. So let me take a little listen at the original. What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends.
The third song off of the great album.
Yeah.
So okay, so that is
Sergeant Pepper's.
Okay, so that was the Beatles. I didn't know that was originally a Beatles song because originally I do Beatles. Know now the song. Uh-huh. I know it because of
The Wonder Years.
Of course. Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I mean that is definitely how I think our generation.
Yeah.
Is.
Yeah, most certainly. That's how I didn't know that was a Beatles song originally. I know nothing about the Beatles. I've never even seen Across the Universe. Yeah.
And they did and they sang that song.
I don't know if I've seen that though. You don't have to see that to know the Beatles though.
Oh, good. I'm glad you don't.
You just have to know the Beatles.
I know the Beatles. I'm not going to be one of those people who just stands up there and says, just like, the Beatles are overrated. Because I can't say that because I don't know them enough.
Yeah.
No, true.
So, but I won't make that claim ever. So.
The Joe Cocker one.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit of it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Let's do that.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do I?
Yeah, that is a very, very good version.
Oh, you know, if you make anything soulful, you'll probably just make it
I think
better.
That's what it is, right? Like, it is that touch of soul there that made the cover so good. All right, Ryan, so why did you pick this song?
Well, I mainly picked it because a good friend of mine, we've been covering it for years, mm-hmm. And he is a modern day Joe Cocker of sorts. He is one of the most amazing singers I've ever played with, and he's got the Joe Cocker voice, you know, so which is hard to find in a male singer these days.
Yeah.
So that's my personal connection to the song. But the Joe Cocker one, obviously the Wonder Years thing is where, you know, my mom used to love the Wonder Years. So like it was always mm-hmm. on and that's how I knew the song. And then I learned the Beatles one later. Mm-hmm. But I also just liked how different they are. They're completely, he basically took the song and just extracted the lyrics and completely changed the music. You know, the music is totally different and it's a totally different feel and all that. And he's got, and it's like his iconic voice is like, you know. Once you hear the first lyrics, it's just like, oh wow, like you're instantly moved by it. And and another favorite part of mine was one of my favorite musicians, Leon Russell, was the band leader of the Joe Cocker mm-hmm. band, which kind of a little known fact if you don't know Leon Russell, but he is also another famous songwriter like from that era. So you know, just the whole package, I just like everything about it, you know.
You think the Wonder Years will ever get remade?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, they'll set it in like the 90s, I think.
Yeah. Right? And maybe make it like.
Or
a more...
like a Ronald Reagan era.
Maybe, yeah.
That would be like the equivalent about it. All right, cool.
I'm just sitting here, though, looking at the cover art, and just like that is such a fantastic picture. I think that should be the cover of the episode.
Maybe.
A little he almost looks like a drag queen or like something out of Rocky Horror.
Definitely Rocky Horror. Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, yeah.
Mouth agape.
Yeah.
So now it is my turn for my next cover.
Yes, it is.
And have you guys heard of Bobby Brown?
Uh-huh.
Of course. Bobby,
yeah. So, all right. So my cover is Britney Spears' My Prerogative, part of My Prerogative, the greatest hits for Britney Spears. I think it was like let me get the facts on this one. 2004. So by 2004, Britney Spears already had a large collection of just singles.
Yes.
So they had to obviously release a greatest hits album.
Obviously.
And the lead single for this greatest hit album was My Prerogative. Mm-hmm. And mind you, this is going on during like, this is before she shaved her head.
Yeah.
But after her Kevin Federline romance.
Did she kiss Madonna? Like,
huh?
Did she kiss Madonna?
She had already kissed Madonna at this point. Yes. Like this is kind of crazy part. There's like paparazzi following Britney Spears, making her go crazy. So My Prerogative was covered and it was really critically panned.
Okay.
Right? Critically hated. Especially because My Prerogative, the Bobby Brown version is actually really good. Mm-hmm. It's like a really good dance song. It's the genre is officially apparently called New Jack Swing, right? And Britney Spears' My Prerogative is just like a pop cover. Uh-huh. And I think it was just really used as a vehicle for a music video that kind of her showcasing her relationship with the one and only Kevin Federline. So, but it's one of my favorite covers because it's not necessarily a good one, but I still listen to it just because I love Britney Spears. Just no hiding that.
If you don't know already.
Yeah, if you didn't. I mean, one of my Dungeons and Dragons characters is based off of Britney Spears.
Yeah.
That's how dedicated I am to
So she just kind of stands there while other people dance around her.
So how? No, don't you dare. How dare you say that? She does all
At
her
first
dances.
You laughed, and then you're like, oh, no, wait, defense
mode. I thought you were talking about me as my Dungeons and characters. As my Dungeons and Dragons character. No, so yeah, so let's take a listen a little bit about Bobby Brown. All right, so yeah, so just from the lyrics alone, you can see why a Britney Spears cover is kind of, sort of, maybe a little brilliant. This, keep in mind, like the early aughts, that's like the peak paparazzi. I mean, TMZ is starting. All these trashy tabloid magazines are just like, new ones are just sprouting. And Britney Spears was one of these young celebrities who was like caught in the middle of it. It was like her, Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton. This is like the rise, you know, the beginnings of the rise of Kim Kardashian, right? And it makes sense that Britney Spears and her team would create a song that kind of addresses the paparazzi in its own, like, on-the-nose way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this song came to be. So let's listen to a little bit of Britney Spears' My Prerogative. They say I'm nasty. Some questions, why am I so real? But they don't understand me. I really don't know.
So as someone who's not heard either versions, mm-hmm. as of right now, listening to both, I will say that I'm more like, I want to listen to the Britney one more.
Yeah, the Britney one is pretty, it's like, it's not a good song. Like, there's no way this is going to be considered like one of her greatest hits.
Yeah.
But it's like good enough where I enjoy it. I guess mostly because of me knowing who Britney Spears is, her history and stuff, and like her knowing what this time period represents for her. Mm-hmm. It's one of those songs where I'll listen to it and I'm kind of like put in a place. And also, this is like, also for me, this is peak Britney Spears at her like peak in terms of like every young boy's fantasy of like what women should look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is her at like her, she's still thin, she's still like, not that Britney Spears is anymore, but like, you know what I mean? Like, this is like young Britney Spears. Like, this is tight Britney Spears.
Yes.
You know, before her downfall that she would endure like soon after.
Yes.
So Ryan, you've heard this song before?
I don't know exactly when, but whenever it came out, probably, you know.
Yeah, I'm surprised. So this is but how did you hear it? Because this is not a song that I would expect you to hear, because I don't even think it got a lot of airplay.
It sounds like he has a lot of indifference to
it. I am pretty indifferent to it. I don't know. I just, one of those, like, I remember hearing it, you know. I mean, okay. Radio, you know, that's all I used to listen to, radio and tapes. Could have been from my brother, maybe. I know, I remember he used to introduce me to a lot of music, you know, when we were younger. But when did it come out? What was the year? Let me, I got
2004. I'm sorry, 2004.
Okay, I got to think about what I was, where I was at that point in life.
Well, don't think too much. Don't worry, it's okay. but yeah, so, and you never heard the Bobby Brown one, right?
I definitely never heard the Bobby Brown
one. The Bobby Brown one is a good listen. Again, this is just, I think the message is, for me, what's more important here, like, kind of, they're both struggling with, like, people talking all this shit about them.
Sure, and
let them live and stuff.
True,
and
yeah.
This is, I can relate to this.
I think just from first listen, though, I prefer the Bobby Brown version.
Ooh.
You and Nicole, it's just got that. Now. It's got that '90s hip hop feel, you know.
It's, well, it's like, '80s. It's '88.
I know, but it's like, that means it's like a little. It's like a little before
early
its
'90s
time,
is
still, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure, for sure.
It's got the Britney one's got that gay club feel, which
it
I
most certainly does. Yes.
Okay, so my pick, my last pick, your is last actually pick. My number one pick.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I kind of went down in terms of favoritism, and okay, this song, this song. Is very controversial, but it's in, probably out of all the songs we're all going to be talking about, it's probably one of the most important songs ever.
Oh.
For pop music and rock and roll music. Okay, this is a song that shaped rock and roll. This is a song that on that fucking Rolling Stone countdown, it was at number 19.
Okay.
Which is an outrage because I think it should be in the top 10. This song, like,
you keep forgetting, it's like the, of all music. So.
Of rock and roll.
Of rock and roll, okay.
Which like, kind of encompasses like a, all okay. of popular music and stuff. But like, I think that not only did it shape it, I think it's so fucking important. And this song is Hound Dog.
Mm. Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes, of course.
So
wait, who's the remake?
Elvis Presley's
Elvis.
The remake.
Elvis is the remake.
Cover. The cover. The cover. Yeah, Elvis. So the first person, this song was written by Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller.
Okay.
And Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller, really important songwriters. Some songs that you might know is like the song that I opened this episode with, Stand By Me.
Uh-huh.
That was my cover of it. Jailhouse Rock, Yakety Yak, Don't Come Back.
Like, oh.
Really important rock and roll songwriters. And they actually wrote it when they were like 19, apparently. Okay. And they wrote it for a woman named Big Mama Thornton. Blues singer. Mm-hmm. And like, they called her Big Mama because she was a really large, abrasive woman. And they wanted to write a song for her that would encompass her, what she embodies,
okay.
essentially. And they used a slang term about a hound dog, a man who, like, you know, uses women pretty much for, like, their money and their services and stuff.
Is a hound dog a fuckboy?
Kind of, yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
So the whole song is, like, a euphemism on that.
Wow, okay.
So that's what that song's about. And, you know, they wanted a song that she can just, like, let loose and do what she does good with her voice and all this stuff. Uh-huh. Really simple song. Apparently, they wrote it in, like, 12 minutes. The hardest part were the lyrics that they came up with. Mm. But, and it was her most successful song that she ever recorded, actually. I wrote it down. She, yeah, it was her only hit song.
Oh.
And it, like, really helped bring, like, black R&B music mm-hmm. into a rock music scene.
Okay.
So it was, like, really impactful when that first came out. 1952. So here's a little bit of the original.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping on the door. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping on the door. You can wag your tail, but I ain't gonna feed you no more.
So I don't know how familiar you are with the Elvis one, but the lyrics are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for a reason. So Elvis was on the rise around 55, 56. Mm-hmm. 56 is when he got signed to RCA and he started making his most prolific songs.
Okay.
Heartbreak Hotel, Don't Be Cruel, and all this stuff. I'm a big Elvis fan, by the way. I don't know if people know this about me. Big Elvis fan. And so around this time, he was familiar with the Big Mama Thornton, a cover of it, and he really liked it.
Yeah.
But there had been other people who covered it before him. Huh. And one of them was a band called Freddie and the Bellboys. Freddie Bell and the Bellboys.
Okay.
And the thing about Hound Dog is that it's very R&B and it's very of a black scene. Mm-hmm. So Freddie Bell and the Bellboys are a white boy band. And when they covered the song, they actually kind of changed the lyrics to make it more relatable for white people. That right there is controversial because of the history. And a lot of people think that, you know, Big Mama Thornton and stuff got like robbed of. I mean, when they sold that single, they sold it via a company and like the songwriters and Big Mama didn't even get a lot of money for it. Mm-hmm. So like they were robbed before Elvis took the cover of it.
Oh, wow.
But so somebody suggested it to him. He heard it from Freddie Bell and the Bellboys.
Okay.
He knew the Mama Thornton version. And so he decided to do more of the cover of the Freddie Bell version, which is why the lyrics are so different. And the sound of it, and it got unbelievable airplay.
Yeah.
It was Hound Dog sold 10 million copies in 1956.
Oh, damn.
That is unbelievable.
Right, right.
And this was pretty much rock and roll is here to stay
yes.
moment.
Yes.
And I think that the way that it sounds and just like the energy of it, I think is what makes it such a great song. Like taking aside all the problematic things about like, you know, white music and black music and their relationship and popular culture and stuff, as songs, mm-hmm. the Elvis version might be one of the, I think it definitely is a song that shaped rock and roll.
Uh-huh.
Very important moment. Mm-hmm. Everyone who heard this song, like John Lennon heard this song in England and was like amazed by it. Like people all over the world heard this song.
Wow. Okay.
I've
heard it. I've never thought that much.
Well, you were alive in 1956.
Exactly.
But yeah, so here is a little bit of Elvis Presley's Hound Dog.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Imagine this guy is like on your TVs and on your radio, but when you see the TVs, he was like really shaking it. And he was gyrating, really gyrating and like really shaking his pelvis and all this stuff. You know, Elvis the pelvis.
Oh, that's and so
like,
cute.
And if you watch him though, like he's the way he dances is very sensual and sexual. Yeah. And he's a very good looking man on top of that. So it was just like, it caused a stir and all this controversy when he came out. And it just like, it was momentous.
Okay.
So I think that there's a lot of things. They're good songs. They're fun songs. And then they're like historical songs.
Yeah, yeah, no. So, that's a good choice.
Do you guys know these songs? Do you like them?
I actually, of course I know Hound Dog by Elvis. I actually never have heard the original.
Oh.
Already her voice was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the originals, but I like that woman's voice, that's for sure. You can tell she's got some attitude, that's for sure.
And some pipes, yeah. Like, I mean, that was just like, that's just starting.
I always like that stuff too, like from, you know, you think back to those times in the 40s, 50s, whatever, and it's like, the times were so much different then, to think that like this big black woman with an attitude was like, you know, getting her voice out there and stuff with all the segregation and civil rights stuff that was going on.
She did not
have
the airplay that Elvis did.
No, of course. But it just always marvels me sometimes that like when you think about like, you know.
Yeah.
The the fact that that somebody saw like this woman, I was like, we need to get her into a studio and record her. You know what I mean?
Oh, hell yeah. And this is just like so my scene. Like if you know me and you see me physically though, you know like, oh, that girl wants to be like a 1950s boy. Yeah. That's what I style myself after. Yeah. So.
All right. That great choice, Nicole.
Shanks.
Awesome. Awesome last choice. Ryan, you have your last choice.
All right.
Make it quick. We're pressed for time here.
I've been secretly researching other songs too, and there's just so many that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm
gonna wait till the next Grammys, okay?
This was kind of a tie for me with "Live and Let Die," even though I went with "Live and Let Die" first.
Okay.
But, for me personally, I'm gonna go with a David Bowie song, which was redone in the '90s by Nirvana, which is "Man Who Sold the World."
Mm. Oh, okay. Don't know either of these songs.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, and I always knew the Nirvana version. I never knew the Bowie version. I think it was part of the Nirvana Unplugged concert, you know?
Okay.
Like the famous 90s Nirvana Unplugged, and they had the little string quartet playing with them and stuff, which was awesome. And I like the vibe of the song, and it's very, you know, dark and depressing. And who better to make it more dark and depressing than, you know, Kurt Cobain?
Yeah, true.
So,
that's you're ending on a dark note. I like it. I'll definitely be sure to check those out.
Well, let's play a little.
Oh, we're gonna play a little bit of it.
Okay,
we're gonna play a little bit of it.
We passed up on the stair. We spoke of was and when, although I wasn't there. He said I was his friend, which gave us some surprise.
So, do you have a relationship with either David Bowie or Nirvana music?
No, I like David Bowie. I don't. I've never been one. So, I know. Fact about me, I don't really go out and buy like music albums.
Okay.
I was just, if I hear something on the radio that I like, I'll listen to it and maybe download it. But I don't really. I've never was one to like really gravitate towards music in that manner. So any David Bowie songs I know are kind of like his staples.
Okay.
Something that gets like a lot of airplay. So a song like this, never heard of it before.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. So then let's play the Nirvana MTV Unplugged.
We passed upon the stair. Spoken was and when. Although I wasn't there. Said I was his friend. Which came. I spoke into his eyes. I thought you died alone.
So Ryan, was Nirvana or David Bowie like influential on you or your band Swizz?
Oh yeah, I'd say Nirvana definitely was. They were one of those bands that I just always listened to. I used to love 90s rock. I mean, I still do, you know, all that 90s rock stuff. Mm-hmm. So and Bowie too. Bowie later in my life has become an influence, just going back and listening to some of the stuff that's not his popular hits, like you said Rolando. You probably, most people probably know his, all the other, you know, hits that are on the radio and stuff, but there's some
Space Oddity.
Yeah, of course. There's some real good
with Queen.
Yeah.
I probably like Bowie more than Nirvana now. But I think what I liked about this song so much was that I feel like in the 90s when they did this song, like I kind of got the vibe of like everyone was just like, what, like why are they doing this, like what the hell is this, like Nirvana's playing a David Bowie song, like this is, and it's like an obscure Bowie song, you know what I mean? And I think that the Nirvana version is more popular than the Bowie version. I think that people that are my age and grew up in the 90s know this.
Definitely.
That were into 90s rock and the whole alternative scene just know this song. And that opened them up to David Bowie by being fans of Nirvana, you know? So that's kind of why I chose that one.
So actually, this is an excellent segue for my final pick for the song, which I just want to mention is just there is this generational thing, right? Where, as I mentioned with like my parents liking the original well, I forgot the name of the song already. With the Fugees, right?
Killing Me Softly.
You know, like there's just, you know, it's a generational thing, and like the three of us were in the relative same age group. Ryan, you're 32. You're 20. You're 30 now.
I'm 30.
You're officially 30 now. Yeah. So yeah, we're all in our 30s. So like this is a generational thing right now. I guess in going with the generational thing, I think this is a very, very, very contemporary. Like, I think it's still getting a lot of airplay right now. My last cover was Toto's Africa and Weezer's Africa. It's actually what kind of started this idea for us to do an episode with remakes, music remakes. Because the Weezer Africa has like this weird, very millennial story behind it of how it got started. Do you guys know the story of how this song came to be, Ryan?
No, yeah.
No? Okay, so it was honestly a Twitter campaign, basically. Like, there were a lot of people tweeting at the band to have them do a Africa cover.
Wow.
And at one point or another, I guess they just kind of gave up and just like, all right, here it is. And now they have a whole album of covers coming out. So go Weezer. And Weezer's one of those weird bands where as they get older, somehow, some way, their age, their fans are getting younger and younger. You don't really see that a lot in the music industry, right? As like your band ages, your fan base kind of gets older or start to drop off. They haven't had that experience, and that's a very, very weird phenomenon.
Yeah.
So the song, the Weezer cover for Africa, is one of those songs that's kind of very divisive, right? You have your hardcore originalists who are going to want to just listen to Toto's Africa, which in and of its own is a very great song. And then you have your kind of your generations who are just like saying they like the Weezer one. I fall in that. I like the Weezer cover. I think it's a very good cover. I think for me, what makes this a good cover is kind of it still feels very much the same and yet different enough that I enjoy it.
I see.
What about you, Ryan? Any opinions on the Weezer cover?
So
Toto's Africa.
I like it. I mean, I just like it because I love the song and I think they did it properly and I think the recording is great and I particularly enjoyed the video where Weird Al comes and plays it with them live.
That's right.
You know, and I'm a huge Weird Al fan. I mean, so that was kind of a selling point for me to like it. But I gotta go with the original. I like more. You can't compare to the original of this song. I mean, it's legendary. It's just like it is the quintessential Toto song. Beyond Toto, even if you don't know Toto, you know the song Africa.
Yes.
And even though Weezer does it justice, it's just you can never touch the original. You know, it's the best.
Let's play it.
The drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation.
The other thing I like about this song, I don't know, it's a white band, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they singing about Africa? I don't. It's like a weird disconnect. It almost feels a little like imperialistic, in my opinion.
Ooh. Yeah,
I don't know if anyone's ever thought about this.
I never thought.
No, okay, I do. Wow. These are the things that keep me up at night all the time, like these random thoughts.
Wow.
Apparently, someone by this Twitter handle at H-R-D-A-Z-K-A. I don't know how you pronounce that, but he actually has an interesting thread in which he kind of breaks down like what the song is really about. And his theory is that the song is about a man trying to fight his lycanthropy, that he's a werewolf and he's in Africa trying to find a cure. According to his, if you read his breakdown, it makes sense. And I love this idea of it.
Okay.
So that's another place that Africa's Toto has a place in my heart for sure.
Wow. All right, let's play a little bit about Weezer and then I'm going to dish on this.
I hear the drums echoing tonight, but she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. Wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient
melody. It's so non-threatening.
I will say the Weezer one I like better. There is something incredibly irritating about this song.
The original?
Yes.
The Toto. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, that's the best part.
There is just something about this song where if I hear it and if I was drunk and there was a group of people around me singing their asses off to the song, I would still be irritated.
Oh, you're going to hate my wedding?
It's not one of those songs where I'm like, oh, the alcohol in my system is bringing out how much I actually like it. It's like, no, it actually might make me cower. And that's like excuse so myself. I don't know. There's something about Africa that's one of those 80s songs. And I guess just one of those pop songs in general that just kind of pissed me off.
Weird. All right. So what do you think it is that pisses you off? Does it piss you off too, Ryan?
No. I think it's just in the same category. I think maybe I'm right with this, but in that category of like, Don't Stop Believing and like Sweet Home Alabama and like all those songs that are so overplayed and oversung by drunk idiots, you know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. Don't Stop Believing. Ryan,
it might fall into that category. You know?
You and I can definitely attest to how much that song has been overplayed from our life in college.
Oh, yes. It could be that. I think it's more of like a song though, because I don't associate Africa with like a group of people or an experience or like the way that people responded. I wish I could. It's one of those weird, like, it's in my DNA to not like this song. Like, there's something about what it does to my ear that I can't explain. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't vibe with me.
Toto's original. What about Weezer's?
Even the Weezer one, the Weezer one I can stand more.
Uh-huh.
There's something, maybe it's also the way that the 80s one was recorded.
Yeah, because the 80s one sounds like 80s. It sounds like from his generation. And I think the Weezer one, I like it just because it kind of takes the original essence of the original one and kind of just like really just updates it.
But it's so interesting because for me, I like recordings of older songs because I don't like digital audio, like song recordings too much.
Okay.
Like I don't know how it was recorded, but like it doesn't like vibe with my ear as well as like stuff from the before the 80s.
Well, they definitely were. I mean, but, yeah, Toto's had synths, right? Ryan, you could maybe answer that.
Yeah, of course.
It's just, I don't know. It's one of those unexplainable phenomenons for me.
No, you know what? Everyone is entitled to their opinion.
Yeah.
For sure. I disagree with you. No. But on a critical, on a real note, though, I think a lot of critics might agree with you, though. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, like I said, I don't have an ear for music. That's actually why I wanted to have a guest for this episode, just because this isn't my forte. Like, I don't know much about music. My father does, but it wasn't passed down on me. It was passed on my sister.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know about this, but there is an exhibit that some guy made. There are now 6 solar-powered speakers in the middle of the desert in Africa that consistently play Toto's Africa. It's on repeat for eternity.
Oh, well, that's true.
Somebody wasted their money on that in Africa.
And it's just in the middle of the desert. And so I forget who it was, but somebody had like a comedy bit about it. Like, imagine if you're like stranded in the desert and you hear music in the distance and you're like, oh my God, thank God I'm saved. And you go across up the dune or whatever over the hill and you go and just see 6 speakers playing Africa forever.
I would be afraid that I'm going crazy.
Oh yeah!
I'm lost in the fucking Africa. I'm hearing Africa. Clearly, God has chosen this is my time to go.
God, That pisses me off, man.
That's so funny. Yeah. And like, it's also messed up. It's just like,
it's so
you're
wrong.
Probably scaring poor animals.
Like, you know, this is what you use your money on? Seriously? So yep. You could go back to America and tell people? By yeah. the way.
I think that's the beauty about music and movies in general too. But music's more so is just, music is way more one-on-one than movies.
Yes, it is.
Like movies are usually an experience that you experience with a group.
And music you could experience anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You
know? Music brings the people yeah. together. Mix the bourgeoisie and the rebel.
All right. Well,
thank you, Ryan, so much for being on our show. We've really enjoyed you. We're going to have in our show links to his Instagram and all his stuff so you can check out his band.
For sure.
Show him love.
And let us know what you guys thought of this week's episode. Let us know what you thought of our opinions on the originals and the covers.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, you can follow us on Instagram at Remakes Reboots Revivals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I always get them messed up. And or on Facebook, Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. And of course, you can always email us. Our email is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
Very good.
So with that said, Ryan, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thank you guys. This was a blast.
I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm glad
fun.
You enjoyed it.
It was fun.
This is good. This could have gone either way. It went either way. All right, Nicole.
So until next time,
stay unoriginal.